Hello, America. This is the place for uncensored talk on everything that divides us as a nation. I'm Alan Jacoby, and welcome to The Great Divide. All right, we're back. The Great Divide. I have someone pretty cool with me. Courtney Giles running for Congress, North Carolina's 4th Congressional District. Not a politician. Nurse, as a matter of fact. Courtney, how are you? What's going on?
I'm doing great. It's a great day here in North Carolina. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you coming. I'm in the blue bubble in New York, and I'm looking at houses in South Carolina currently. So I may be your neighbor soon, you know, state below you.
Nice. Live in the South. Everybody's nice to your face, at least. Yeah.
So you're running for Congress, and you're a nurse by, you know, career. Obviously, I can guess some reasons why you're running, but you woke up one day and had this crazy idea that now you want to get involved fighting with the swamp trolls in D.C. So bring us up to speed, who you are and what got you into this rat race, I guess I'll call it.
Yeah, well, I grew up in North Carolina and I got my nursing degree from a school called Bob Jones in South Carolina, and then did mostly emergency room nursing for about the last 9 years or so, give or take. So I dabbled in some other kinds of nursing, but mostly travel nursing. And I met my husband in Seattle. So we were married in 2020, fun COVID wedding. And then he's a CPA, I'm a nurse. We live a very normal life as to most people's standards. And he actually quit his job toward the end of 2020, right before the election, and just saw what happened overnight. He specializes in data analytics and was talking to me about how Google was really censoring a lot of, you know, what people were asking about the election. And he really wanted to know if there was groups that were working on it. But if you ask Google, no one was asking the question and no one was working on it. So he was venting to me. So I texted my best friend from college, whose mother-in-law is now in U.S. Congress in Illinois, Mary Miller. And I texted her and said, hey, does your mother-in-law know anybody working on, you know, the election integrity process? And now we call it election integrity, but just what happened in the election, he was happy to go count ballots. He had two months off. He was going to start a business in January in 2021. And so he had 2 months off of free time and wanted to help. And about 3 days later, Mark Meadows calls his cell phone and says, you know, I got a great pitch about you. What can you do? So he talked about, you know, looking through the voter registration data. My husband had already kind of looked through some of that stuff. So he got plugged into Georgia. So he ended up being the lead data expert on the Trump versus Raffensperger case in Georgia. So when you ask, like, how do you fall into, you know, running for Congress as a nurse? I say, you know, I've been advocating for patients for almost 10 years now. I, you know, assess what they need, whether that's emotional, that's physical, that's psychological stress, financial stress sometimes. And, you know, I'm able to quickly build relationship and empathize with those needs. So the idea of representing people is something that I've been doing for a very long time. And something that I've always valued growing up is truth and honesty. And what I'm seeing right now in the media, and that's what my husband was able to see very clearly back in 2020, is that we're no longer getting all of the information that there is out there. We're clearly being censored. Freedom of speech is being infringed. And, you know, after going through that process and seeing what my husband saw and seeing how, you know, the rest of America wasn't seeing what we were seeing and how people were divided over a lot of these subjects, and they were, friends were hating friends, family was hating family, and COVID, you know, the vaccine rolled out around the same time. And I was presented with, you know, taking the vaccine at the end of 2020. I just like to remind people that this was like less than a year into allegedly knowing what this virus was. Yeah. And to decline the vaccine, you had to sign something saying, I'm aware I can't get COVID from the vaccine, and I'm aware that I'm risking the lives of my patients, all the patients in the hospital, and all my friends and family. And with this information, I'm willing to decline. And so I felt like that was incredibly manipulative, you know, right from the get-go. And then I realized after about, you know, 3 to 6 months, that was the jargon that the media was using to get people to take it, was you don't care about other people. So I say that that really was just marketing that was rolled out with the Pfizer vaccine. And it's, yeah, what everybody even says up to today. So the lack of truth really in the media, and then it really ended on these vaccine mandates. And both of my parents were presented with losing their job. They're both frontline respiratory therapists, and they were both told they were going to be fired if they didn't take it. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back, where, you know, our lack of freedom that we're, you know, our rights and our freedoms are being infringed on. And that was the point where it touched my family, and I couldn't stand for it anymore.
Yeah, and you touched on so much. All great stuff, especially the no, I mean, the suppression of truth, Courtney, is huge. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I have my show. You know, I became a Facebook fugitive, and I wasn't saying anything brash or conspiratorial. I wasn't talking about Trump. I wasn't talking about elections. I might post a couple things here and there, and then someone would attack me, and I would say something as simple of, listen, leave the voting to the adults, stay in mom's basement with your knit hat, eating Hot Pockets, playing Xbox all day. And I was getting 30-day Facebook jail sentences until they got rid of me. And I says, you know what? I people tell me start a podcast. I started it. It blew up. I talked to great people like you and others who love America, who love freedom, who love the freedom of speech that we have. And then we see that it's being suppressed by leftists, globalists, whatever you want to call them. They don't like people like us because we want to retain and because we love the Constitution and we love America. And that's why I like seeing now it's very interesting that since I'll say Donald Trump, I think people started waking up in the Obama era and saying, hey, what's going on here with some of this stuff? And then Trump became president, which nobody expected. And they attacked him because he was against the establishment. He was exposing certain things. And it made a lot of younger people, you know, 20s and 30s, actually start paying attention to what's going on in politics and waking up, whatever some people call it, red pilled, whatever that may be. And then you have people like you that come out of the woodwork who was a nurse your entire professional career. And you just decided, you know what, I think I can make a difference and I'm going to run for Congress. And we need more of that because we have a lot. I mean, look at all of the establishment politicians. I mean, you have one right in the state below you, Lindsey Graham. I had respect for Lindsey years ago. Now I just realized he's a rhino, but it took me a little while to realize that. And the problem is the establishment. The problem is the status quo that goes on when people run for Congress and end up in D.C. and the special interest groups and the dark money and the control and the manipulation. And there's so much behind it. And the truth, it's always what wins and has to always be at the forefront. And I like that you say the word truth a lot because it's important for people to hear. I was looking at your website and before that, you were just at CPAC. CPAC just happened, which is, you know, the who's who in the conservative movement. I saw some videos and you were all over the place, photos on social media. Obviously your first time there, I'd assume. How was it? How was the experience there with meeting people? How was that?
I thought it was great. And I think it's really important that, you know, us conservatives get together on a regular basis like that, because, you know, as much as you're just hearing the same thing over and over again, everybody has the same opinion. It's like, you need to know that you're not alone and you need to know that there's a lot of people fighting the same fight you are. So I met a lot of other people that were running for Congress all over the country. And it was just cool to hear everybody's stories and how we're all frustrated. And it's a whole lot of people that, you know, or have not run for political office before. And I think just like you were touching on, there's so many people who are the establishment that have been there for so long and they've gotten comfortable and they're not really representing real people anymore. They don't even know what it's like to be a normal person or to have a regular conversation that's not political anymore. And so it was just really refreshing to hear people's stories, hear the great speakers, see President Trump. My favorite part was in his speech was he goes, well, as your president, and everybody laughed because, you know, we all kind of look at him as our president. So he's a, you know, phenomenal speaker. And that was really just great to hear him speak and, you know, hear all the other leaders of our day right now speaking and just all the patriots that we're all excited about, you know, new people running for Congress.
Yeah, it seemed like it was alive and electrifying there. That's good. So there's something on your website that shot out at me, and it said basically government decisions boiled down to money. And we know that because we go into the establishment and things. And then you made a comment on there, but they're usually disguised as social issues, which I agree with. That's what stood out there. Take us into that a little bit. Why you said that. I mean, I think we're on the same page, but I want to hear from you. You know, these big government decisions, obviously they boil down to money because of special interest groups and who's getting this and who's getting that, and are disguised as social issues. I'll throw one example, probably critical race theory. Go into that a little bit.
Yeah, I would say starting like with my background in nursing, I've just seen a trend in the past couple of years, and I'm sure, you know, there's been problems with this before, but especially in the past couple of years, there is so much priority that's given to money and profit and how do we, you know, pinch the penny rather than quality patient care. And, you know, I look at a hospital as a business and the product is quality patient care and patients' lives. Like people, you know, love to talk politics or love to talk about, you know, debatable issues until their family member and themselves are diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, at this point, it's like if your product is people's livelihood and their life, you know, we should really be prioritizing that over anything, really. And if you do a great quality job, just like with any business that has a quality product, generally your business does a lot better. But we're trending away from quality product to how do we make a profit? And I've seen that in a lot of decisions that was becoming very infuriating. I would say it attributes a lot to the burnout in nursing, is not because, you know, it's such a hard job and it's physically toiling on the body, but it's because you're not, as nurses, we go into the job to help people and we love helping people and we love giving quality care. But when an administrator makes a decision, usually related to staffing, is some type of staffing issue, is where it makes it very challenging as a nurse to give quality care. Well, my husband was also working in a large CPA firm, and he was noticing a very similar problem of the larger firm had acquired his smaller firm, and he could see where the quality of the product they were giving, in this case, it would be like a financial audit, was so much worse than the, and they were charging more than the quality they were giving as a small business. And so we're seeing that now on a large scale where the federal government is funneling so many grants and money to people that we see this power grab where people, the more money you continuously give them, the more they're reliant on that. Like you say to a teacher that, you know, you want to get rid of the Department of Education federally and they just want to choke. They're like, why would you want to take away funding to education? I'm like, the federal government is not in charge of education. They should not be manipulating the system and putting all these ties to the money that's going to education. So like, I would say my favorite topic related to this issue is really what's going on in education with the critical race theory, with the gender studies. You know, they'll say that they're trying to keep kids safe with COVID, but then they're trying to mask the kids, make the kids get a vaccine, at least manipulate them into getting a vaccine. But then with that money, it seems as though the money funneling is, you know, labeled COVID relief, but really it's, you know, well, you have to start teaching these gender studies and tell kids that they can identify as whatever they want, but then the parents can't know because that's illegal, which I don't understand how that can work. Because again, going back to medicine and pediatrics, like you have to have a lot of parental consent to do anything with a pediatric patient under 18, but then they can go into school and wear a tutu if they're a boy, but you're not allowed to tell the parents that they're struggling with that issue. I think we're going a very bad direction with our country.
I think we just became best friends because I talk about that so much with the identity politics and the gender identity and the victimology that they want to teach in schools. I have a 9-year-old. She was started the fourth grade in September. Me and my wife made a conscious decision to withdraw her from the public school system and put her into a homeschool co-op. And it is the best thing. I say this all the time. It is the best thing we've done for her as far as her new school career, because she can actually multiply. She can do long division. She is learning history. She's learning science. There's none of this nonsense. Zero. She's in a homeschool co-op with about, I don't know, 75 to 100 children with about 30 teachers or so. Wow, zero mask mandate, zero cases of COVID all throughout the year up to now. And it's just, she's learning, she's blossoming and making friends. Public schools, she was in the public school system. You know, at least once a week, we get a call from the nurse's office. She has a stomach ache because of anxiety, because of the nonsense that goes on there. And then you have the issue with, there are school districts out there now in this country that say, listen, come to school dressed how your parents want you to dress. And then you can go to the nurse's office and change into the clothes you want to wear at school and be the person you want to identify as. And if it's that tutu and you're Harry and you want to be called Sally, we won't tell mommy and daddy. It'll be our little secret. Yeah, usually secrets between teachers and students end up the teacher going to jail. Okay, this is, I'm not going to co-parent with the government, and nobody should. And I say, if I had the power to do it, there would be two departments I would defund federally. And that would be number one, the Department of Education, because they have no place in our children's education, the federal government. And of course, the ATF, because I'm a big gun guy. But I honestly believe this to me, if you ask me right now, I tell everybody the public school system is broken. It cannot be fixed and it needs to be abandoned. People should be pulling their children out. I want school choice. I understand everybody can't pull their children out. It is the free public babysitter because people have to work three jobs because the economy is horrible and inflation and taxes. But and everything wraps into one another. And education, to me, it's a scary place because I feel, Courtney, that we don't have a majority of teachers in the education system now. The majority is activists with access to our children's minds to mold them in a very dangerous way.
Yeah. And I mean, I try to stay away too much from saying too many blanket statements about teachers, because I know that there's good teachers. And I know Absolutely. There's a lot of teachers that are struggling with the same problems you and I are struggling with. Like, they don't want to take the vaccine and they're being threatened with their job and they know they're short-staffed and they're like, why are you threatening my job? You need me. And none of this makes a lot of sense. But, you know, when you're talking about like how to really reform this, and something that has been really just a heartbreaking, you know, just digging into a lot of this education stuff, because I've been in healthcare and, you know, I don't have kids yet. And so education has not been something on the forefront of my mind until, you know, really digging into a lot of these politics. And our lieutenant governor in North Carolina, Mark Robinson, actually leaked one of the videos, or a video of one of the books, in the public school, Gender Queer. And people were just shocked and people were calling him a bigot. And it's like, do you really want your children seeing these pictures? And it's just mind blowing to me how people would, you know, support that. But either way, I think a good solution that, you know, could work from a federal standpoint, because you know how challenging it's going to be to completely eradicate the Department of Education, is my goal is to bring power back down to the people. So, you know, there's been like a voucher system thrown around. A lot of Republicans have talked about that, but not only would I want it to be a federal voucher system, whatever money is going from the federal government to the state, it would come in the form of a voucher per student to the parent. It would be taken to, you know, that child's school, whether that's homeschool, public school, charter school, private school. But I would also take it a step further and say that the federal government is giving no funds whatsoever to a state that does not match that voucher system. So then that would completely bring the power from the federal, from the state, all the way down to the parent. So we wouldn't even have to touch these issues of how do we get this book out of schools, or how do we, you know, make sure the parents have a choice as to whether their child knows if they're a boy or a girl. You know, these studies that we're all frustrated by, I think if you have a free market in education, then the schools are going to have to actually want the children to be there and have to work for the parents, really, you know, voucher. And unfortunately, what we're seeing, like you're talking about pulling your own children out of public school, and I hear that all the time in North Carolina, but what breaks my heart is these children who don't have parents that are paying attention or are really present in their lives, that, like, even foster children, you know, who's advocating for these kids? They're just going to get stuck in this rotten public school that has no kids that are really behaving and actually trying to do well. And so they're going to get completely lost in the system. We saw that. My husband was mentoring a child in Seattle for probably 5 years. And we just saw that with him, where you talked to one of the guidance counselors and they're just like, how many more mentors can you get? Because all of these kids really need someone standing up for them. And so I think if we can create, you know, that almost like capitalism in education, then you're going to improve the public school, and then our tax dollars go somewhere where we want, you know, our children's education to be.
It's sensible. It makes sense. If you know, another problem we have in Congress is, you know, the Republican Party is weak. The leadership is weak. They're not fighters. You know, Kevin McCarthy, I'm sorry, but, you know, he should not be speaker. He should not be leader. Mitch McConnell in the Senate, who just made a statement saying that if they do get the majority, he will be the majority leader, which kills me because he shouldn't be. I wish somebody would primary Mitch McConnell. But these are the people we have. And, you know, I often say there are some real trailblazers in the Republican Party right now, newer members of Congress. And I understood they don't have the majority, but I feel that the Republican leadership does not listen to these younger, aggressive members, because, again, it's the status quo. That's not how we do things. Did you raise enough money yet? Did you make your quota for the RNC yet? You know, did you go across the street and solicit funds because, you know, you can't do that on Capitol grounds? And it's really that's where they're concerned. Are you raising enough money so you can get the committee spot you want? Are you raising the next tier so maybe you could get the chairman spot of a committee? That's what it's about. It's about that money. And it's ridiculous. But the Democrats, see, the Democrats, unfortunately, I'd hate to say it, but they're smart and they're aggressive and they fight to the death. They'll eat their own. Yes. And the problem with they have these radical progressives like AOCs and the Ilhan Omar and all of them, Ayanna Pressley's. I feel that the Democrat leadership listens to them. Like the Republican leadership does not listen to people like, hey, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Jim Jordan, and Matt Gaetz, you know, people that are outspoken. And, you know, it's a shame. And that's why I'm hoping when when the big red wave comes and there is a lot of people like you who enough of them or Joe Kent in Washington State, Andrew McCarthy in New York get in, they can change the way things. Because I'll tell you this, and this is what I tell to everybody out there. Do not donate to the Republican Party. Donate to the individual candidates like Courtney Giles for Congress.com. We'll mention that again, but go to your website and donate to you because we know where that money's going to your campaign if they support you. Where now the Republican establishment is running scared because we'll take Joe Kent in Washington State, Trump endorsed. He's being his opponent, I forget her name, that he's primarying, is being funded by Kevin McCarthy through RNC donations because the Republican Party is scared of people like you and people like him who go against the establishment who may end up coming in and getting that majority in the Republican Party and changing the leadership. And that's what they don't want.
Which, I mean, we go back to money with that, like that there's so much money you were just talking about. But also you think, why do these representatives go along with these, you know, these orders from the RNC? And we know that they're just being paid off. Like we're never going to be able to really directly find out that information. But you think all these large corporations and these, you know, big money donors that can just drop, you know, the max of, you know, for per couple is over 10K, mm-hmm. you know, per couple, you know, if you have a bunch of these people that are just giving money directly to a candidate to keep them in line, you know, a lot of people get manipulated by that. And it's just disgusting. Yeah. And I think it happens to people who've gotten very comfortable. They're used to going to all these fancy parties. They want to stay going to the fancy parties. You know, they're not with the people anymore. They're not representing the people. They're just going to the parties and saying, you know, I'll just throw a bunch of money out there for commercials to get you to re-vote for me. It's just disgusting.
It is. And then, you know, you said the word disgusting, and I'm going to bring this into jobs and the economy because no one's going to convince me because it's not true. Joe Biden did not create any new jobs. It is all a lie. Obviously, you agree with
me. There's been plenty of jobs available for like a year or two now.
Right. And he's putting out these numbers, you know, well, he's not. Whoever his handlers are, you know, Susan Rice, Barack Obama, Jen Psaki, whatever. They're putting out these numbers and graphs and saying, look at the job growth. No other president has ever had this economic turnaround in job growth. When what really, really pisses me off is how they think the American people are so stupid. The problem is a lot of them are and use them as useful idiots and say, if we put a graph in front of them that shows we did such a good job and Trump did a crap job, people will believe it, especially those who despise and hate the big orange boogeyman. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and it's all about optics. It's all about how you present it. Where I am, there are still restaurants that can't have full dinner service because they can't hire waiters because the New York governor completely shut down the economy and Democrat governors and Democrat mayors shut down cities and states all over the country during this pandemic. And now we're going to turn around and tout that. Oh, look at all these jobs that Joe Biden created. No, they were just empty jobs that people went back to. And still, there are a tremendous amount of people out of work. So what are we going to do with this with this struggling economy that we have going on.
It is troubling to see how many people just go along with whatever they're put forth in the news. Like, I thought that, I don't know if you saw that Project Veritas video that came out with the FDA guy that he is an economist.
Yes.
And he was like valuing individual lives at $5 million. And he was saying statistics, you know, you can make them say whatever you really want them to say. And, you know, we're seeing that right now. I don't know if you've seen like the meme that came out that showed the CDC, you know, the map for COVID recently. It went from like completely all red to all green. Yeah. And, you know, they can manipulate the numbers as to like what they're actually portraying. It's not that COVID got significantly better in a week. It's that they decided COVID was better in a week. And I would say as a nurse, I'm like, it's very obvious we're going to have a giant spike in January and it's going to get better in March. That's logical. That is science. So it's not that you did anything right. It's that the weather changed and that happens every year. Well, but, you know, nobody tends to think like that
anymore. No. I'm pretty sure, Courtney, there's going to be an unbelievably deadly variant that gets dropped in late August, early September to roll right into the midterm election. And everyone's going to say
more and more mail-in votes.
Yeah. Nobody can go stand online to vote. Everybody's going to die on the polling lines. That's going to be the next thing. And then, of course, the usual talking points, January 6th, was they're ramping up. I mean, they're talking about, oh, criminal charges against Donald Trump with conspiracy and all of this. And they're going after everyone that was ever loyal to Donald Trump now. And this is going to be the narrative because it's all a distraction, like, you know, Ukraine and Russia. And, you know, we
agree.
I think we spent. Yeah, yesterday or today, maybe I think every day, about $22 million we're still giving to Russia to buy gas and oil. Why aren't we opening the Keystone Pipeline? Why?
Yeah. And it's interesting. People are, you know, on Twitter relating Russians to Republicans. And I don't know how people buy into that because it's very obvious that the Democrats are funding Russia. Like they are on the bad side, which I'm not sure if there's good side and bad side with Ukraine and Russia. Just like you said, I think there's a large distraction that's happening. It's very sad to see how many lives are being lost right now. And I think it's really because of bad leadership over there as well. And so we can't, like you said, get distracted by that. And it's interesting the way, you know, Biden throws all this stuff out and it sounds so good. Like their jargon is so good from the left. And that's something I always go back to truth is that the media and the left have created so many words that they repeat over and over again, you know, like keeping people safe or, you know, all of these things that, you know, all tie together into the same stuff. Like they're talking about, you know, we have to stand with Ukraine or stand with France or whoever's, you know, having trouble at the time. And it's like, we really do need to go back to that. I say that I'm God first, America second, but those America first policies that say, you know, I don't want to send our men over to help with a nuclear power plant situation under Joe Biden. We are going to blow up our soldiers and I do not want to send them over there. When people ask, you know, what do you think we should be doing? I'm saying under Joe Biden, nothing, because I don't trust any American soldier to have to go over there under his ruling because he doesn't have that standpoint of no American left behind. There's still people left on the ground in Afghanistan and it's a disaster. And he's able to somehow get up with the State of the Union address and talk about how we're going to protect the borders and fund police. And I'm like,
Yeah.
Wasn't that our idea? I'm just curious. Right.
Yeah. Fund the police. Meanwhile, you have members of the administration who were bailing out rioters who were setting fires to businesses and police cars. They were funding and bailing them out of jail who are now currently in our executive branch. And it is disgusting. And as far as Ukraine, nobody wants to see innocent people die, especially from war and horrific injuries. But I stand with Ukraine. I got attacked. I'm getting attacked on Twitter because I'm not pro Putin. You know, Putin pop is a bad guy.
Right.
But Ukraine, I tell you what, Ukraine is one of the most corrupt governments. It is a playground for corruption and money laundering. Right. Zelensky, he's a hero. Zelensky's president for 3 years. Before that, he was a bad actor and comedian. And I'll tell you, if Zelensky wasn't corrupt, he would have done an investigation on why when Joe Biden was vice president, he extorted them to fire a prosecutor that might have been looking into his son for $1 billion. We probably would get the truth of what Zelensky's role is with the phone call that ultimately ended up in Donald Trump's impeachment. So there are so many variables. Again, I don't want to see innocent people right. die, but this is not our war. We don't have a stake in it. And that's just militarily, we should not have one American life over there. When I hear people, even conservatives, say we should be over there fighting with Ukraine. And my answer to them is, okay, drive your teenage child who's 18 years old, some of them, drive them to the recruiter first and then tell me that. And that's the problem.
And I think that like something that I hear, especially like from the Christian point of view, people are like, well, they're, you know, made in the image of God too. They're people too. We should care about them too. We should care about those lives. Of course I care about those lives, but that is not the role of the government.
Right.
And it's not going to be my role as a congresswoman to, I'm not going to take my Christian hat off, but I am, the role of our government is to protect Americans. And if we're not protecting Americans and whatever policy is pushed, then we're not doing a very good job as the American government, because no other countries are putting America first. So right. Our government needs to always make sure that they're prioritizing American lives and American really prosperity. And then, you know, maybe fund some nonprofits or something. If you want to have a military nonprofit that wants to go over and help Ukraine, great. Have it privately funded, publicly funded, you know, whatever. But it can't be our military fighting a battle for another country.
No, it's some just odd things around. We're just topic locally where I am in New York, my county, Nassau County, New York. They just announced this was interesting. My state's not we have a Republican now as a county executive, but my state obviously is not a gun friendly state. They just put a thing out that said, hey, at a gun store that they're doing this event, they're telling people, this is what they're telling New Yorkers, especially in my county, come and donate your long guns. Because yeah, so they want people to bring in their long guns, so they can send them over to Ukraine. That's to help doing. In the oh my fight.
God. Are people doing it?
I just saw it a couple days ago. And when I saw it, oh. I could not, they had a press conference about it. Bring your photo ID, make sure the weapon is operable and bring it, whether it's your, they bolt action shot, unbelievable.
That's just a way to collect everybody's guns.
I even think there was a word, military compatible weapons, and they want to send them over to Ukraine so they can, you know, give to people to help fight. And I saw that and I go, ever in your life would you see a local government saying we want you to donate your guns so we could send them to another country so they could fight? I couldn't even believe it. And it's
how
true.
How about we donate some money to pay for new guns to go to, if you want to do that, like if you want to nonprofitly give guns that are new guns, but I'm not giving my gun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what they're doing. I mean, listen, there's so many crazy things also coming out of the administration. I mean, not too long ago, I read a thing saying that Joe Biden was considering deploying United States Border Patrol agents to the border of Poland. I mean, that was a legit news story. Like, yeah. I really, you know, and that brings us now to another big hot topic, which not too many people are talking about, the southern border that's been wide open since Joe Biden was installed in the Oval Office. And it's now they're busing people and flying people all over the country, which that's going to lead me. We're going to wrap up with the redistricting that's been going on. But all right. So we are paying for, our tax dollars are going towards the relocation of single fighting age illegal aliens who've invaded our country and broke the law to extended stay Americas all over the country with preloaded credit cards, with free clothing. Every state in the union is a border state. I'm all the way up north in New York, and not an hour and a half away from me in Westchester at an airport, there were illegals flown in the dark of night. Okay. So this
why
is
why do it during the day. Do you not want people to know that you're doing it? I'm just,
well, there was actually, there was actually, yeah, there was actually recordings. There was a leaked recording of the one, I believe it was either by me or Pennsylvania, where there were two law enforcement officers. And I think they was on their body cam, and they says, well, they're obviously doing it at night because they don't want people to see. And then you see these lines of people, and they're not migrant families. They're either unaccompanied adults. You have unaccompanied minors. You have some families, and then you have literally four busloads in Florida. They showed up, they were dropped off at an extended stay America, full accommodations, brand new clothes, and pre-loaded credit cards. And then people say to me, well, we have to take care of these people. No, we don't. And as a matter of fact, you have that mentality. Congratulations, because you're complicit in and paying for human trafficking operations that are being done by our federal government. So again, the southern border. And what is Biden saying to State of the Union? Yeah, we're going to get scanners to help us with to fight the drug smuggling problem. Really, this is what we're doing?
And economically, you know, the more money they spend, the worse inflation gets. I mean, we all know that. It's like basic math at this point. But, you know, you think that the Democrats love to talk about how they love, you know, hurting the elite and helping the lower income people, which is completely opposite of what they actually do. And in this case, the more they create inflation, it doesn't matter if they increase, you know, the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which I don't think they should be doing that, to put that plug in there. But even if they do that, they're creating so much inflation that these lower income people, I just hope that they open their eyes before 2020, you know, the 2022 election. We're already in 2022, but I really hope before they vote, they're seeing that their dollar is not worth as much as it was 2 years ago. And part of that is because our government cares more about illegal non-American people coming into this country than they do American low-income families that need help themselves.
Right. And well, you know, obviously we know that this is just a giant Democrat voting registration drive that they're doing with the southern border open. Get him in, get him amnesty, get him a driver's license, get them registered to vote, and we'll ship them all to red states. We'll redistrict. Oh, yeah. As Democrats, the Democrats will gerrymander. They're doing exactly what they have been fighting and yelling at the top of their lungs, accusing Republicans of doing. They're cheating and they want to redistrict to help them. And the Democrats are doing it, and they're being successful in doing it. Well, didn't you fall into the redistricting?
Yes, our state legislature is run by Republicans. They have the majority. We have a Democrat governor and a Democrat run Supreme Court. So our North Carolina Supreme Court is 4-3 Democrat. But the state constitution says that the North Carolina legislature, actually, I think the U.S. Constitution says that state legislatures draw the maps, which is why we see, you know, in different states, you see very different gerrymandering, and they all do it. Democrats do it. And I would say the Republicans did not do it in the extreme way that you see Illinois and New York doing it.
Yeah.
But so they drew a map, and it was out in November of last year. So we've been going by this map up until about a month ago when the Democrats had actually appealed the decision to like the first level court a few days before they even revealed the map in November. So that has gotten, you know, gone up the court of appeals up to the North Carolina Supreme Court. And so the North Carolina Supreme Court decided that it was gerrymandered. Of course, they throw in by race because that's the only way they can really get anything done. And right. So they overturned our maps. The North Carolina Supreme Court did it. And what's a fun fact about that is the fourth judge that really was the tie-breaking vote, her whole campaign was funded by the same guy who funded this lawsuit. So it was a complete conflict of interest, and she should have recused herself as a judge, but she did not. She voted on this. And so they overturned the maps. And then the North Carolina legislature, both the House and the Senate, both drew a set of maps, sent those in to the three panel judge, which the three panel judge appointed three map masters to review those maps. And then those masters actually drew a separate congressional map. And this court actually, instead of choosing one of the legislature maps, chose the three appointed masters map. So three individuals drew the map for North Carolina, not the North Carolina legislature. And that is the map that we're using.
You were originally running in the 6th district, and now you're running in the 4th district.
That's correct.
And did that change the dynamic of your district significantly? Where you how does that make you feel?
I mean, I would say I would not have wanted this because of the precedent that it's setting and the unlawfulness. I'm all about, you know, following the rules. For me personally, I think they did a disservice to themselves because I think it made the district a lot better for me. It is a blue district. But I would say the counties that they kind of tacked on to the two Democrat counties are ones that I'm very familiar with. They are more red leaning, and I think they've diluted their vote to where it's going to be easier for me to flip the seat. So thank you, Democrats.
Well, I hope you win. I do. I I like your I like your style. I like what you say. I think anybody out there who is in your district, and I say this often on my show too, like I just mentioned, don't donate to Republican candidates. As people have to wake up and realize that, all right, I'm in New York. There aren't many congressional candidates that I really care about or support in my area. And people need to look at the big picture and realize we need the majority in D.C. So if someone's in New York, you can take your wallet out and donate to someone in North Carolina. You could take your wallet out if you're in North Carolina and donate to someone in Arizona, because it's about regaining back the majority so we can regain our freedom and regain our country back to where it was, you know, 2 years ago, where everybody was so proud of our country. We had a great economy. You didn't have to worry about losing your job because of ridiculousness or not being able to go to work because you didn't get a needle stuck in your arm. And that's where we need to go. So I tell people, you have to look at all these candidates. Just because, you know, someone doesn't live in your district doesn't mean they can't support you somehow, whether it's monetarily or whatever it is, phone calls. I mean, we live in an age now, I know people that are in other states that are doing phone calls for other candidates all over the country. We can do that. So, you know, with that, can you tell everybody, Courtney, where everybody can find you and how they can help you?
Yeah, thank you. My website is CourtneyGeelsForCongress.com, and that's G-E-E-L-S. And I'm on Twitter, Getter, Instagram at Courtney Geels, and Facebook is Courtney Geels for Congress. Very repetitive, easy to find me. But yeah, I would love any support that anyone wants to give. Definitely volunteers, like you said. They can volunteer to do phone banking from another state. Absolutely. And we do need funds because the Democrats throw a lot of money at these races. Another fun fact, if you've heard of Clay Aiken, who was runner up on American Idol about almost 20 years ago at this point, he's actually running for the Democrat seat in the same district. And he raised over, I think, $1 million just in the first week declaring that he was running. So I don't know if he'll win the Democrat primary, but there is going to be a lot of money thrown into the Democrat, you know, race for this district because they don't want to lose this district. It's one of their more what they would call guaranteed seats, but I plan to change that.
Well, good. And we need that. We need the grassroots funding, the grassroots donations, people, boots on the ground. That's great. So Courtney Geels for Congress.com running for Congresswoman in North Carolina's 4th district. Courtney, I really appreciate you coming on and talking to me and everybody. And everybody out there, check it out. CourtneyGeelsForCongress.com. Make a donation. Do it. Let's get that seat red. So, Courtney, thank you for being here with me.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
All right. All right, everybody. Get all the episodes over at TheGreatDivide1776.com. And don't forget the Roku channel on the Patriot Podcast Network. If you have a Roku app in your smart TV or device, just download the Patriot Podcast Network. You'll get my show and about 15 other amazing podcasts on Roku TV, Patriot Podcast Network. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And most of all, God bless America. You take care. Do you love getting a good night's sleep? I mean, like a good night's sleep. Do you like waking up refreshed, feeling energized? Like, oh, I just had the best night's sleep in the whole damn world. Then you have to get over to MyPillow.com. And get the most amazing pillows. They have the mattress topper. They have beds. They have the flannel Giza sheets. They have slippers. I have a lot of these products. I think Mike Lindell is an amazing patriot. And MyPillow, America-owned company, they have great products. They have hundreds of products. And if you go to MyPillow.com, and you use my promo code, GREAT1776, you can save up to 66% off hundreds of amazing products. Again, Mike Lindell loves America. He loves freedom. He loves election integrity. And he loves giving great deals at MyPillow.com. Bathrobes, down comforters, they have pajamas now. They even have dog beds. My dog loves his MyPillow dog bed. I love my slippers, and I want you to get in on the savings. So again, MyPillow.com, use promo code GREAT1776 at checkout and get up to 66% off on hundreds of products. MyPillow.com. Go shop now. You can reach out to me with opinions and ideas for other episodes at TheGreatDivide1776@gmail.com. You can also find me on social media at The Great Divide Podcast. And please be sure to leave a review for this podcast so the show can be shared to other listeners. Thank you, and God bless America.